Episode 21 with John Martin.
Where meditation meets daily life, this is the Meditation Freedom Podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Meditation Freedom Podcast. My name is Seeker Rode and I'm your host. And this podcast is all about meditation and mindfulness. And what I investigate or explore in this podcast, why do people start a meditation practice? Why do they continue a meditation practice? And how then do they bring whatever they learn or whatever they practice into their daily lives and bring it into accord? And so a lot of it is about getting in touch with that why. And I think that is a good starting point for conversations about this particular subject. Because, of course, in the end, what we want to do is become more aware and more awake and more compassionate and wise so that the world around us becomes more like that. And that benefits all of us in the long run. So for these podcasts, what I've been doing is bringing in various guests that have different kinds of experiences with meditation and mindfulness. And some of them are teachers and some of them are students, some of them are kind of on the beginning level, and some of them are more experienced. And the next few weeks are going to be a little bit different because my wife and I are both finished with selling our house in the north in Washington State. And since we're now moving down to Southern California, we have a house to clean out and to transfer the contents of it and hopefully let a bunch of it go. I look forward to that part, especially. Since we're going to be moving and driving a big truck and all of that and cleaning our house, the internet is going to be, of course, not available. And I'm going to be doing something slightly different with the podcast in the next couple of weeks. We'll release a guided meditation that Christina, my wife, has put together. And maybe I'll spend an episode talking about meditation, maybe a shorter episode. And hopefully that provides you with something different to listen to on the podcast. And you can always skip past it if that's not what you're there for. And of course, I love feedback. So let me know if that's something that you liked or if you didn't like it, let me know too. That's very important for me to know kind of what you are looking for in this podcast and what helps you the most. Because it's all, for me, it's about giving you what you actually are needing or wanting to listen to. Please let me know by going to meditationfreedom.com/21, or you can click on the contact form, and you can actually use any podcast episode and make a comment at the bottom of the episode show notes. So that's no problem. Wherever you leave a comment, I'll be able to find it and respond to it. Thank you. Let's get into the interview with John Martin, a student of Zen, and he is in the Diamond Sangha lineage of Zen Buddhism. John currently lives in Spokane, Washington, and that's where the Zen Center of Spokane is there where he practices. And he also goes to yearly retreats with Jack Duffy, who has retreats both in Spokane as well as Bellingham and Deming on the west side of the Cascade Mountains. Here's the interview with John Martin. Thanks so much, John. How did you get into this particular practice? What brought you? What kind of events or situations brought you to this kind of practice?
Well, how far back do you want to go? It goes way back.
Well, that's fine.
You can... Maybe I can briefly mention that I was attracted to fundamentalist Christianity as a teenager. My parents had sent me to a summer camp. And they didn't know it was run by a fundamentalist church. And so I got all this preaching that was new to me. And so that was my path when I was a teenager for a few years. And that didn't work for me. I ended up in my early 20s abandoning all religion and just lived a... agnostic, atheist life, mm-hmm. and decided that one of the problems I had with the Christian phase of my life was that I was accepting dogma as truth. I was accepting what other people were saying without learning it for myself. And so I resolved that I would not do that again. Mm-hmm. I was just going to live my life the way I saw it. And after 3 or 4 years, I stumbled on a book on Zen. It was The Way of Zen by Alan Watts. And as I was reading through that book, I went, oh, wow, this is good stuff. Mm-hmm. I understand what he's talking about. Yeah. So it really caught my attention, and I read a little more. Then started trying to figure out how to meditate. Learned a little bit from the TM movement way back in the early 70s, perhaps.
And when you say it, you understood what he was talking about, did you understand all of it, or was it enough for you to resonate and try to dig deeper into it?
Oh, I can't say I understood all of it, but there's several key concepts that I did get, and one of them was non-duality. When he explained non-duality, that was a whole new understanding for me, and I really did get that one, and there was probably a couple of others in there too. Mm-hmm. That continued, and I had my own meditation practice off and on, and there, I had periods of time when I wasn't paying attention to it, and it would just evaporate, and maybe a year later or so, I'd go, oh, I've not been meditating. I feel a need to get back to something, and I know it involves meditation, and I know I need to do a little more study.
And was that meditation, were you attracted to meditation as a way to get insight or as a way to experience something that you were looking for?
I'm not sure. Maybe both.
Yeah.
Maybe more the insight. Yeah. And then as far as the Zen Center of Spokane, now you know this story, Siko. I think I've mentioned it to you before, but I got fairly involved in the lead up to the presidential elections of 2004. And when that was all done, and dust was settling and so forth, I realized that I was still full of a lot of anger and even hatred over my chosen political enemies. Mm-hmm. And decided I really need to do something about this. And so I found the Zen Center of Spokane online and phoned the number that I found, and I've been with the group ever since.
Right. And have you found that joining a group is different than trying to meditate alone?
Oh, very much so, yeah. I think especially the first couple of years with the Zen Center, I derived tremendous support from the regular Saturday morning sits and the support of meditating with other people. And that whole structure that keeps you on your cushion and prevents you from just a moment of restlessness coming along and tricking you into jumping up and going and doing something else.
Right, right.
And the book studies that we do and so forth, it's been very helpful.
So the structure is very helpful also.
Oh yeah, the structure is extremely helpful. Yes, and so I think if you see structure as a support, as a means to an end, as a tool, then you would not see it as limiting or kind of an old-fashioned tradition that doesn't fit the modern era or anything like that. It's there to help people.
Mm-hmm. And so how has your relationship with those perceived enemies that you had, has that changed at all, or your relationship with other people as a result of practicing?
Well, I don't think my political views have shifted much. My indulging in hatred towards people that I've never met is way less than it used to be. So that's a good thing. The hatred thing is the target is no longer individual people. It's more like there are so many facets to a complex society as such as ours, and there are some facets that are they're sick. They're not functioning well. There's a very poor design, and so a person might get, say, elected to Congress. Well, I think the structure of Congress is stacked against you. That it's very hard to be an awake and honest person and not be corrupted by the money from the lobbyists and so forth when you're in that environment all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I've shifted from individuals to the system as what I perceive as something that's bad.
Mm-hmm. And do you see that a system can be changed slowly by individuals or by groups? Or is it like something that you think is completely needs to be uprooted or redesigned?
Well, the uprooting and redesign is always a tempting fantasy because it's quick. I think the ultimate expression of that is war. You know,
right.
you perceive an enemy. Well, the best thing to do is just to eliminate your enemy and then everything's good.
Yeah, but that makes the assumption that the enemy is outside and
right,
and the
enemy, and also that the enemy out there is all bad. All things bad reside in that person. All things good reside in me. You know,
it's much harder to change. You know, to change yourself and then slowly change the system
mm-hmm. that way. But to truly, have a culture evolving towards a healthier, better culture, it does require that the individuals in that culture become more aware, more educated, more enlightened, and more developed in a balanced way where not just our minds but our hearts are also developed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably a long-term deal.
Yeah, right. So has that insight of seeing more long-term as opposed to wanting something changed in a short term, has it given you a way to see more long term, this practice? So you don't get attached to outcomes as much as maybe you would in the past.
Perhaps. I understand how to be unattached to the outcomes, but more focused on the nature of your actions and where they truly originate. Is a more aware and perhaps spiritual way to be in the world. What was your question?
Well, I was just saying that when you practice, there's a certain letting go of the desire to have certain outcomes,
mm-hmm.
and I think the practice can really help broaden your horizons in the sense of not having strong attachments to certain outcomes,
mm-hmm.
whether they're just within your immediate area or more like in the geopolitical or
mm-hmm.
the larger arena.
I've probably developed a little in that direction. I have a little more understanding now that there are a lot of things that, as things play out, from my actions, I'm not necessarily in control. I might do something in one particular place and space and time, but the consequences of what I do in that one spot goes on without me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's better to focus on, the nature of my act. And am I acting free of greed or hatred? Free of the desire for revenge, for example, what is my true motivation? I think that's more important than banking on a particular outcome, where you have the specifics in your mind, because it never comes out that way.
Right.
No matter what you do in life, even driving to the store to get milk and eggs, it's never going to be exactly like you picture in your mind.
Right, and that reminds me of, you mentioned you had a road incident or some experience where you talked about being on the road and dealing with anger that arises in that kind of situation, because that's like real daily life type of...
I have two incidents like this where I really experienced road rage, not from somebody else, my own. So, and both times I was very surprised that I had this road rage. Like, I didn't know it was, I didn't know I had the potential for it. I didn't know it was there. My first incident was, maybe 15 years ago, maybe more. I was just trying to get on the freeway, I-90. I was just on the on-ramp there, and it was fall weather, and it was rainy and dark. And so I was really looking carefully in my side view mirror to make sure there was space for me to merge with the traffic. And this guy comes zooming by me, and really scared me because I didn't even see him coming. I wasn't looking, you know, I didn't see him in the side view mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I was looking at the rear view mirror, I would have seen him. But he roared by me, and the sound of his engine also was very loud. I don't even remember which side he was on now, but it made me just jump and scream. He screamed into the traffic, and it just somehow triggered this rage. And it took me about 2 miles on the freeway to kind of get things under control. And this whole time, I was just sitting with this rage, realizing that if I had a much bigger vehicle and it was already all dented up and I didn't care about more scratches, I would have chased that guy down, and I would have bumped his car and driven him into the Jersey barrier on the side or something. That's how illogical and enraged I was. But I just had a little car. I couldn't catch up to him. So all I could do was sit there and think, okay, now hold on. I'm a Buddhist, right? What does a Buddhist do in a situation like that? Well, I think you just kind of try to be detached and look at it and just watch it instead of being it. And that was hard to do. But, but 2 miles, maybe 3 miles, I was starting to settle down. And yeah, it was very strong. The second time, kind of similar incident where somebody roared past me really close. I'm surprised he didn't actually touch my vehicle. And I don't know. In either of these cases, I don't know what made these people drive like that. But the second time, not only did I have the powerlessness of not even not wanting to actually smash him because of the damage to my own car, but I also had my wife beside me who was screaming, "Stop, stop," and that helped a lot.
Yeah. She's screaming you to stop the car, or
no, to stop speeding up. Like, oh, I didn't know what I would do if I actually caught up with the guy. And she reminded me, he's so crazy, he might have a gun in there and shoot you. Oh, yeah, you got a point there, so slow down. So those are two incidents where something emerged inside me that totally surprised me, and I had to struggle to become detached from the rage that I experienced. I have to say, too, that in both cases, I got a lot of... what was also important is the constraints that I had. I didn't have full freedom of choice. I was limited by what my car could do. I was limited by my rational mind speaking a little bit, saying, "No, John, you really don't want to do that." Right. That's more of an internal thing. But the external constraints were... the realities of the traffic and not wanting to, do something that was even more dangerous. The fact that I have a small car that wasn't very powerful and couldn't catch the guy, and, you know, all this stuff. Right. And my wife telling me, to get sane again. So those were external constraints. But there are also other times when... something's happened and there were no external constraints at all. And there'd be that moment of choice. And so if you're interested in those, I can mention those as well.
Sure, yeah. Okay. Here's another example.
Well, one of them actually involves you and Christina. And this was, I believe, was the first time I met you two. I was showing up at the Zen Center, one of the very first times I was there for a Saturday sit, and we were taking our shoes out in the hall, and we exchanged names, and one of you said, I think one of you said something like, are you new to Spokane, or have you lived here long? And I said something. And then I asked you, I said, well, how long have you two been in this town? And Christina just laughed. She said, in this town, that's funny. Funny way to say that. And somehow, and this is just me, it's not you or Christina, this is just me, I took that as a kind of a put down, that that I was using a phrase that was either very dated, or maybe she thought I was pompous. I didn't know quite what her judgment was, but I could, as soon as she laughed, I could feel myself starting to get defensive. And that moment, you know, it's one of these times that if you catch it right at the beginning, that's when things are the most fluid. So as soon as I realized that, I went, I didn't even have words behind this decision. I just made the decision that I wasn't going to go there. I was just going to watch it happen. Mm-hmm. And so I did. I just kind of went, oh, there's my feeling vulnerable and insecure again. There's my feeling judged again. That sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And because I was able to catch it at the very beginning, it just evaporated. Mm-hmm. And it was an experience of freedom. Right. I did not make a psychic cage around myself. I was free.
You didn't take it personal.
Absolutely not. It just happened. And, you know, the laugh happened, my judgment happened, my reaction happened. I just watched it happen. And then I was fine.
Right.
I was done with it.
Yeah.
Well, another one that I had thought of when I was thinking about you coming here today was many years ago, Mary and I were in the kitchen of our old house, and we had a disagreement about something, which I have no idea now what it was, but we were kind of getting at each other a little bit, and she said something to me that hooked me. And I watched the whole thing happen. I watched the words go in, and there was a strong visual component to this experience. It was like I was looking inside myself, and I actually could see this happening. That inside myself, looking down through my spine at the bottom, there was this very dark pool of liquid. It was kind of like mud. And I looked down, and I saw this shape start to emerge, and as it came out, I realized it was a coiled snake and in shape. But it was really my anger. I was going to get angry about what Mary just said, and I watched it come out, and it was halfway out, and I realized I had a choice. At that moment, I still had a choice. I could say yes or no to this thing I was looking at. So I said no. And it went back down. Huh. No anger.
That's a great example.
Yeah. Zero anger.
And what about present moment awareness? Have you noticed that changing over the years as a result of practicing?
I think so. I think I'm more aware of when I'm not in the present, and I can kind of pull myself away from all my head trips or whatever I'm doing to take myself out of the present.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm going for a hike or you know, just going somewhere where maybe there's beautiful scenery, I'm much more likely to actually notice the scenery. If I'm on a walk, you know, I will be much more likely to be present with the smells and the sounds as well as the sights.
And is that something as a result of practicing in that moment you're trying to do?
No,
or simply a result of practicing over time, where you're just more aware
Yes, the second thing you said is just, I think it's a cumulative effect of practicing over time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Is there anything else that you do during daily life, you know, when you're not on the cushion, mm-hmm. that is practice related?
Hmm. Sometimes I will use the Tibetan mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, and I will visualize. When I feel a need to be more in my heart than my head, I will use that. And I visualize, my energy and my awareness going from my heart, I mean my head to my heart, or from wherever to my heart.
Yeah, and for those who are not listening, Om Mani Padme Hum is kind of translated as the jewel is in the lotus, and which is then translated more as that which I seek, I already am. Would that kind of be a translation that you're thinking of? Are you thinking of that, doing that mantra?
The jewel in the lotus being the heart.
Right.
So, yeah, the pearl of great price, the jewel that we're all seeking.
And that which we already are.
Yes. Right. But we don't see it there.
We don't always realize
We don't know it's there.
Yeah.
We have to put our attention there to live from that spot. So, when I'm feeling, really scattered, irritated, bored, stuff like that, I will sometimes use that.
Mm-hmm. That's a great tool. And what's the role of a teacher in your practice?
I get to ask Jack some questions that I don't know who else I could possibly ask questions of that nature. And so he's been very reassuring for me. It's almost like sometimes I don't know where I am in this journey. And even though I have, I have some mental roadmap, so to speak. Perhaps the 10 ox herding pictures from Zen is a bit of a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know where I am on that roadmap, so I need an outside, an objective opinion and second opinion.
Right.
Like, am I more or less awakened than I think I am? So I asked Jack, where am I? Which ox herding picture am I in right now? So. That's one of the interactions I have with Jack.
Yeah, that's great. Well, do you have any other favorite inspirations or tips that you use that help you daily, other than the ones you've already mentioned?
Your questions make me aware that I could do much more on a daily basis to remind myself to return to the present and so forth. I think I might make that a little project to jot down a couple of these tools and use them more often. But I don't know if I have too many. I just tend to notice. I think I notice more frequently where I am, where my awareness is, where my energies are. And sometimes that's all you need.
All right. And you intend to keep on practicing with this particular lineage? And
certainly, yes. Yeah, it's been good for me. I think one of the aspects of Zen that's a good fit for me is in my youth, I was so much in my head, and Zen is merciless at cutting down those head trips,
right,
and pushing you in out of that comfort zone. So it's been a good fit for me there.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, thanks so much for being willing to open up for this interview. I really appreciate it.
Well, I sure enjoyed it, and I thank you, because now I have another little project. Keep me busy.
All right, thanks.
Okay, see you.
I hope you enjoyed this interview with John Martin from Spokane, Washington. And if you want to find out more about John and look at the show notes, you can go to meditationfreedom.com/21. And of course, leave a comment if you have a couple minutes extra. And then, as I said in the beginning, the next few episodes are going to be slightly different. So a little bit of a change, and then hopefully get back to the interviews in a few weeks. Well, I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day or week or evening. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Meditation Freedom Podcast, where meditation meets daily life.